Tripped in towards Lewandowski!
Magnificent from Cristiano Ronaldo!
Harry Kane, 1-0 England!
Ibrahimovic! Oh, he certainly made the most of that!
You're listening to the official UEFA Euro 2016 podcast.
Thanks for downloading the show. I'm Rob Daly. Today, we preview the quarterfinals. France take on Iceland, the side that conquered England. Journalist Simon Hart joins us to discuss where England go next. Italian football commentator Giuseppe Bassantis helps preview the Azzurri's game with Germany. And we'll hear from Gareth Bale.
The support is incredible again. They turn out non-stop. They don't stop singing. We'll keep fighting for them, keep trying to make them proud and keep giving them something to cheer about.
Plus, we're joined by Chris Parrott and Tom Kell on the UEFA Euro 2016 podcast. And welcome to the show alongside me, Chris and Tom, as always. Chris, quarterfinal time, what are the four ties? Probably worth reminding people.
Yeah, business end, isn't it? Poland against Portugal in Marseille. The winner will play either Wales or Belgium, who meet in Lille. Then in the bottom half of the draw, Germany against Italy in Bordeaux, the tie of the round. And they'll face either France or Iceland, who of course beat England, and those two meet at the Stade de France.
So very interesting indeed. Tom, you've been to a couple of games in the last few days. What has been your favourite stadium that you've been to?
That's a tricky one, Rob. I think for the occasion, the Stade de France on the opening day was just a phenomenal experience, really. In terms of the actual stadium, Lille, I was at the other day for Germany-Slovakia, and it's a really nice size, one of those grounds that's just nice and compact. It feels big enough for the atmosphere, not so big that the atmosphere's drowned out. It was really great for Germany, Slovakia. Germany outnumbering the Slovaks by something like 30-1, I think.
I'll stay in the north as well, Lens. Not just because it was England-Wales, but I'm a bit of a traditionalist, and the fact it's a proper old school football ground. You're very close to the pitch, steep sides, real footballing town, tiny town as well. I think Lens is great. There's no more games there, but it's a fantastic stadium.
Chris says he's a traditionalist and he's turned up in tracksuit bottoms today that he looks like he's had since the 50s. So.
Chris, yeah, you're very dressed down for the podcast today. Is this going to affect your performance?
No, because last time I was told off for wearing the team kit, so I thought I'll go.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, I'll be flippant next time and wear what I want.
Don't forget, you can follow our Audio Boom channel as well for the show, and we're still in the iTunes charts. If you do get a minute, please leave us a review and help us stay in the charts. Gents, should we talk about football?
Why not?
You can't just nod. You need to speak into the microphone.
I thought we were already speaking about football.
Iceland-France. We're going to hear from Simon Hart, a football writer who was part of the England reporting team for the tournament shortly. But talking about Iceland, Chris, that they have this, and we saw at the end of the England game, this wonderful clapping celebration. Let's hear a bit of it now. You absolutely love, I think everyone absolutely loves this.
Yeah, I can imagine there'll be pale imitations being done up and down Europe next year. It's a terrifying sound. Actually, when you look at them there, it's not so frightening, but it makes an almighty sound around the stadium. I was at the Stade de France when they beat Austria to qualify, and after that win, it was amazing throughout the game and then at the end of the game. And against England, you know, to a man, I love that moment on the final whistle when the whole team just runs to one end of the ground, and they're very much in unison. And I think that chant, the players do it back to the fans, and team spirit, that togetherness is shown perfectly in that moment when they do that clap, and the French will hear it soon enough in the Stade de France too.
It's interesting because when we were talking on the last show, Tom, Iceland, we were hearing from Iceland players and they seemed very optimistic that they could get something. What impressed you most about the manner of their win over England?
I think we've touched on it before, but the composure that they show.
Your words were resonating with me during the game, because at no point did they seem flustered.
I'm glad that my words have stuck with you, Rob. you're leading against England in the last 16 of the Euros, and you'd think at some point they may get slightly nervous, slightly, you know, they may realise the magnitude of what's happening, but it was as though they hadn't. And in fact, it was England who seemed to be the ones that were showing the nerves. The pressure told eventually, I think, for England. And it wasn't a barrage, was it? Iceland deserved credit for that, for their shape and for their mental fortitude, really.
And actually, not just when they were leading, but after, you know, you forget that Wayne Rooney put England ahead inside 4 minutes after a really good start from England. And then they showed no nerves at all. They equalised inside 60 seconds. It's as if they play with, we're here, we're enjoying it, what will be, will be. That type of attitude, but coupled with brilliant tactics from Lagerbäck. And Tom said they're set up fantastically well, and everyone knows what they're doing, everyone knows their jobs, and they have a sprinkling of real quality, particularly in midfield. I think Gylfi Sigurdsson, we've seen him in the Premier League as a good player, but here he provides that moment of calmness on the ball, which allows them to play as a team and to be very, very effective.
Okay, let's hear from the Iceland camp next. Here's defender Curry Arnason speaking to our reporter Johan Sigurdsson after the game.
We kept our composure and defended well for the second half. So, yeah, we all believed. I don't think the rest of the world believed, but we did, and we got away with it.
Could you describe your feelings at the final whistle?
Well, I'm overcome with joy. There's not much to say. He said it before, Gaffer, that he's never lost to England, and we had to keep that going. So, and we did. We know exactly what we were doing, and like I said, me and Ragnar have got such a good cooperation that we felt that we had it under control the whole game. It's a bit more different when Vardy came on. He's got a bit more pace and ball comes in behind, but we kept it under control and I thought we did quite well.
English football, of course, huge in Iceland. How big is this for Icelandic football?
This is, without a shadow of a doubt, the biggest win in Icelandic football history. It's an absolute upset, and we've shocked the world today.
Johan sounded very cool and composed, our reporter there, but he's been a bit of an emotional wreck, I'm sure, over the last few days, Tom.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that he may have been enjoying himself as much as any of the other reporters here in France for Euro2016.com. That he is one of the few Icelanders lucky enough to be in France, and he's enjoying every second of it, that's for sure. I'm sure there's going to be another influx of them for the quarterfinal. I mean, they've shown themselves to be a great team, but this probably won't happen again. Who knows? It might do, but I think they're going to make the most of it, certainly.
It's interesting because you hear the way the players talk, and they say, I forget which player said it. It might have been Ragnar Sigurdsson said, we, all of us, wish this was actually our club team. That they're that close. That they, and I suppose part of it is because they all came up together at the same youth level. They were all in that team that was in the under-21s. I'm trying to think what year.
I think that was 2011, perhaps.
Yeah, that's probably right.
But yeah, I mean, that's a bit of a trend. It's funny you say that, because I remember reading about the Italy team showing them. I mean, there are plenty of Juventus players in that team, but it obviously is a mix of clubs. And there's been plenty of talk that the camp feels like a club camp. And that, I suppose, is one of the keys of international football, isn't it, really? To engender that spirit. And if you can do that, then that's, you're halfway there, really.
Absolutely. Chris, so they take on France. What do we make to their chances of getting a result against the hosts? Is it the Stade de France?
One there in that venue.
They have, yeah.
You know, France are massive, massive favourites, as England were. And I think had England played anywhere near their potential, they would have won that game. And I think if France play anywhere near their potential, they'll go through. Iceland won't change. Well, actually, I say that. Actually, Iceland were, I think, more attacking than people thought. They kept two men up the pitch for the whole of the 90
Even
minutes.
Even the last seconds they did.
You know, that was a change in tactics from Lagerbäck, because I think in all three of their group games, they didn't do that. How they go against France, and I think they did that because they realised the best way to get at England is to attack them. And it worked, didn't it? They scored two goals. They could have scored three or four, let's be honest. Joe Hart made a couple of decent saves. So how they play against France will be interesting. I think they will sit back more because I think France as an attacking unit look quite frightening. But if, you know, it's the same with England, and it will be magnified because it's the hosts in front of 80,000 in the quarterfinal. If they don't score early, all of a sudden Iceland will grow and grow in confidence. And funnier things have happened. They beat England, so why can't they beat France?
Well, what was interesting was some of the Iceland players were saying after defensively, we had the England game under control. They felt they had it under control until Jamie Vardy was introduced, and that pace was, they admit, it was a problem.
Yeah.
Do you think Didier Deschamps might take heed of that.
Yes,
and bring in quicker players, perhaps.
I also think the fact that Kingsley Coman came on at half time against Ireland, allowed Griezmann to go to a more central position. I'd be absolutely shocked if they don't start with Coman and Griezmann behind Giroud, because I think they looked much more dangerous in Lyon in their round of 16 game. But yeah, it was interesting. That was reading those quotes about how when Vardy came on, all of a sudden it was more of a panic and they'd felt very, very comfortable, more comfortable than they did in the Austria game. But Kari Arnesen, just to quickly go back to him, international football in England, we look at players almost and how they do at club football. I don't think it's as much about that. It is about playing as a team, like in any sport. I mean, you look at Arnesen, he's played in the UK for Plymouth, Aberdeen and Rotherham most of his career. But it's quite an English thing, I think, to just look at that and write them off as we should beat them. It's about how you set up. It's about how you play together, and Iceland absolutely proved that.
I think France, though, for the first time I've really thought they could be real contenders here. I thought they looked nervy for much of the group stage, and obviously they fell behind in the last 16, but the way they bounced back, I think, was a real sign that it's not just a group of good players. They've got the spirit. And it was funny, actually. I was in Lille. It was just before the Germany-Slovakia game. And I decided to walk around the stadium, just taking the atmosphere slightly, during the second half of the France game. And I didn't see a TV or check my phone, but I knew exactly what had happened just from the fans inside the ground already, who'd filtered in early, cheering at the goals as they went in.
Right, yeah.
So I came back and knew it had gone from 1-0 to 2-1. And it was interesting because I think there was more excitement at that stage than I've seen at any point so far in the tournament from the French. We touched on it earlier on in one of the earlier podcasts, and I think they really feel like they're on a roll now.
It was a big win to come back against the Republic of Ireland. Let's hear from Jonathan Walters, the Ireland forward, speaking about the campaign and the future of the national team.
Looking forward, that's an exciting team. The likes of Jeff Hendrick, James McCarthy, Robbie Brady, James McLean, and Shane and Darrell up front, they're all excellent. Big Shane at the back, and I thought, you know, bodes well going ahead into the World Cup qualifying coming around next.
It's been a great campaign. What are your highlights of it?
Obviously the Italy game last time round, and you know, we've done ever so well to get out one of the toughest groups. You know, you look at the fans and how they've travelled to all games.
Tom, a quick one on Ireland. You know, they beat the Italians, as Jonathan Walters mentioned there. Their fans won a lot of fans themselves, actually, by the way they carried themselves in France.
4 years ago, Ireland came and won a lot of fans for their supporters, as you said. I think this time they've come and done the same, but they've also shown they had that great result against Italy, and that's the kind of night that will live with those supporters forever.
Absolutely, yeah. The Republic of Ireland in pushing France so close did do some damage, in a sense, to Didier Deschamps' starting 11 for the next game.
Yeah, two changes at least, because N'Golo Kanté and Adil Rami are suspended. Mangala or Umtiti to come in alongside Koscielny, which is, you never want to have to change your centre-back pairing in a major tournament. He's going to have to with no Rami. Giroud and Koscielny are now booking away from potentially missing the semi-final, although it gets wiped out after that, so no one can miss the final. And interestingly, Iceland, 9 players are booking away from a ban. So if they do get through, I don't know what they're going to do if some of those, including the likes of Arnesen, captain Aaron Gunnarsson, the goalkeeper Hannes Halldórsson. It literally, the whole of the team is a booking away from the ban. It won't change the way they play, but it might be very interesting for the semi-final.
Okay, earlier Chris caught up with the football writer Simon Hart, who's been part of the reporting team covering England at the tournament, and they discuss where the FA and the national team goes next.
Follow UEFA Euro 2016 on the go.
Not convincingly cleared, and there's Müller. Wouldn't you just know it?
It is Bale. It's a second for Wales.
Download the official app now.
Simon, you're just about to head home, sadly, because England are out of the competition, but the ramifications from the exit have already started. You've just been to a specially arranged press conference with Roy Hodgson and Martin Glenn from the FA. Exactly what was said?
It was an emotional press conference, really. Roy Hodgson looked, I wouldn't say a broken man, but he looked like he'd been obviously deeply hurt by what happened. His voice was breaking at the end of the press conference as he sort of uttered his last couple of sentences. Um, he he spoke about how much damage one bad night has done to him, to his reputation, and to the players sort of under his charge. It was emotional. He didn't want to be there. He said that more than once, but he felt obliged to sort of make this appearance, because after the game, he just made a very brief appearance on the podium in the press conference room. He basically read out a resignation speech.
I'm extremely disappointed, of course, about tonight's result. Ultimately, I've exited from the competition. We haven't progressed as far as I thought we were capable of, and that's obviously not acceptable. I would have loved to stay on for another 2 years. However, I'm pragmatic and know that we are in the results business.
You know, they delayed on giving him a new contract. There was the idea that if England did well, if they did well enough, they had a good showing, be it going out with their heads held high in the quarterfinals or beyond, he would be offered an extension. But clearly the writing was on the wall. Well, I mean, there was no other option, really, once to lose to Iceland, which is, you know, widely regarded now as the worst defeat England have suffered on a big tournament stage since 1950 in Belo Horizonte against USA, a part-time USA team whose goal was scored by Joe Gaichens, who had been a dishwasher, I think. So, you know, that wasn't great, but nor was losing to Iceland, to be fair.
What was the feeling at full-time amongst in the stadium? Because it felt like one of total shock that England had gone out of the competition.
You could see the shock just by looking at the England players. I found that interesting. I don't know if you can sometimes get this view from, you know, watching on TV. You saw just a stream of Icelandic blue racing towards their end of the pitch. The last act of the match had been an English corner which flew across the box. Dele Alli just missed it. And the minute that happened, the whistle blew and England players just dropped to the ground. There's sort of three or four of them flat out, others on their haunches, England fans booing, so, you know, some of them singing, "You're not fit to wear the shirt." So, you know, straight away you knew this was a, you know, big, big, big night in English football.
Indeed. If we go back to qualifying, 10 wins out of 10, but a lot of the players that merited a start in this competition were the likes of Alli, Kane, Dyer, Vardy even, maybe, that hadn't actually played that much in qualifying. Do you think it was a nice dilemma, but ultimately for Hodgson and for England, it was perhaps almost an unwanted one?
I think this success of Leicester and Tottenham in the Premier League season just finished meant that certain players who hadn't really featured in qualifying became a big part of the picture. So you had that, you know, that dilemma of how to, you know, include people like Vardy, who you've mentioned, Dyer, Dele Alli, also Danny Drinkwater, who was, you know, under consideration until he got dropped at the last minute. And perhaps one problem with this England team in France is that it seems like Roy Hodgson's wanted to include certain players, but in order to get them into the team, almost shoehorn them, they haven't been in their natural positions. I mean, Daniel Sturridge is a case in point. He was playing really, you know, on the wing. Okay, he's a player who likes to roam around and drift around the pitch, but he's not a wide player. And England didn't have enough width yesterday. Obviously, Wayne Rooney came in. He came into this tournament with more than 110 international appearances, but he'd never started a game in midfield for his country. And lo and behold, against Russia, he's in midfield. And again, he'd played well that day, but it's a question of, it's an international football, it's meant to be the most demanding stage, and you probably want your players in their natural positions where they've played all their football.
In terms of the future now, we know there's going to be a new England coach. What challenges do you think they have, because qualifying for World Cup starts in just a couple of months?
I think the biggest challenge is really addressing the mentality of the England team. If you think back to the World Cup in Brazil, they went home after 8 days. Here they've gone out against Iceland, and it's really sort of focused the mind on the fact England don't actually do very well in big tournaments. I mean, the standout statistic for me is that they've actually won as many knockout games in European Championship finals history as Iceland have. And, you know, and Iceland got theirs last night against England. So, you know, we shouldn't actually think England have really... Are we actually that good? I mean, that's the big question to ask. So, and it was interesting hearing Martin Glenn today, who's the FA chief executive. He used the word brittle. and the fact that he wants England players to punch their weight in tournament football. You know, we see Iceland, who are clearly punching above their weight. They're inspired, they're brought together by that shirt, by that flag, and it seems England players are the opposite. So for me, the biggest challenge for whoever comes in is to address that. You know, why do England players seem encumbered by wearing the England shirt? Why can they not reproduce their club form for the country? Brittle was a great word. I mean, he could have used lots of words, you know. Lots of words have been used, obviously.
Yes, they have. They haven't been great reading for the England team. You've seen Iceland in the flesh, though. What chance do they have now of shocking France, do you think?
As I'm the person who predicted that they wouldn't beat England, perhaps I'm not the best person to sort of answer this question. What they can do, I'm sure, is make life very difficult for France. Yesterday, they looked like a proper team. England didn't, but Iceland did. They're a very close-knit group of players. They've grown up together. You know, in Iceland, there's only 330,000 people. And, you know, everybody seems to be a friend of a friend of a friend. They have a great understanding. They all know what their jobs are on the pitch. So there's no stars in the team, but, you know, they are a team, and that's the beauty of it. So why not? I mean, they defended brilliantly. They're so well organised by Lars Lagerbäck. And also, interestingly, they posed a bit of a threat on the counter-attack yesterday. They were the team who towards the end of the game, looked more likely to get a goal than England. So, yeah, I mean, I really hope they go on and, you know, they've already written a Cinderella story, but I hope it continues. And it would be nice to see somebody beat the French, obviously, as an Englishman.
To keep up to date with the latest from UEFA Euro 2016, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or follow us on SoundCloud.
Simon Hart there catching up with Chris after England's exit from UEFA Euro 2016. England out, Wales through. Tom Kell, they take on Belgium, a side in the quarterfinals that they know actually quite well from the last couple of years.
Yeah, they played each other twice in qualifying. Belgium failed to score in both those meetings. It was 0-0 and Wales won 1-0, Gareth Bale scoring the winner in that other one. Belgium were fantastic in the last 16, but Wales are just peaking nicely, and they showed against Northern Ireland that even when their big guns aren't necessarily firing, they can still find a way of winning. I think Gareth Bale is obviously going to be key. I remember reading Vincent Kompany, normally the Belgian captain, obviously out injured out of this tournament. I remember reading his thoughts in a newspaper article before Wales played England, and he was focusing on Bale, and he's obviously played against him. He wasn't actually involved, I don't think, in the two qualifiers, but he was giving some really sage advice about just how important it was to stay unbelievably tight to Bale. And the moment he turns with the ball at his feet, you're in trouble. The way he explained it, I'm sure he'll have been on the phone to his Belgian teammates, because the way he explained it is much better than I can. But he's a much better defender than I am, after all. So, but he was just, yeah, basically, I think that I wouldn't be surprised to see them, maybe not man-marking Bale, but I think they're going to have someone very, very close to him at all times.
Doing a job.
Exactly.
Maybe, as we call it in
exactly.
England. Chris, you were at the Wales-Northern Ireland game.
Quite an odd game in a way. It was a party atmosphere before and after. Both sets of fans stayed in the Parc des Princes for a long time afterwards. The game itself was a really nervy and actually at times fairly low quality affair, because I think both teams had loved the group stage as they would. They went through, they had nothing to lose. All of a sudden, they had a lot to lose because they were playing against a team that both fancied their chances against to reach the quarterfinals of a major tournament. You know, it hasn't happened for a very long time for either. It might be a long time until it happens again. So it was a game which didn't really spark into life, actually, until Wales brought on Johnny Williams, who, for me, changed the game, because Northern Ireland were the better team. But when Williams came on, all of a sudden they had him, Ramsey and Joe Allen, three ball-playing central midfielders. Northern Ireland couldn't get to grips with it. And then that enabled the space for Gareth Bale. And of course, you had to feel awfully sorry for Gareth McCauley, who's had a fantastic tournament, own goal from a brilliant Bale cross. But Williams really changed the game for Wales when he came on. And you can see why they call him Johnny Esther. I think Michael O'Neill got it spot on. They were maybe fortunate in certain games in the group stage. It was their best performance that they went out on. They could easily have beaten Wales. And I think the fact that they got 10,000 people welcoming them back in Belfast this week says it all. It was a great tournament, but one tinged probably with sadness, because they really could have beaten Wales, and we could be sitting here saying Northern Ireland are in the quarterfinals of Euro.
Let's hear from their goalkeeper, Michael McGovern.
Once the raw emotions sort of calmed down, we'll look back on it and with a sense of pride. I mean, the experience has been unbelievable. I've absolutely loved it. It's been the best time of my career by far, and we'll do well ever to match it again, I imagine.
Chris McGovern, as we mentioned on the last show, has been one of the stars of the team at this tournament.
Yeah, he's been amazing, as too as McCauley, as I mentioned, and Aaron Hughes. And just going forward for Northern Ireland now, I think it will be an interesting few months. Hughes and McCauley are 36, Chris Baird's 34, Roy Carroll's 38. It'll be interesting to see how many of those play for their country for how much longer.
Let's hear from the man who effectively ended up winning Wales the game, Gareth Bale.
They make it difficult for the boys up front. They shut shop. So, yeah, we had a game plan. We knew to keep the ball moving, and we knew we had that moment of quality in us, and lucky enough, we got it, and the ball was in the back of the net, and that's all we needed. We forced them into the mistake.
And finally, a word for the Red Wall.
Incredible again. What can I say? The support is incredible again. They turn out non-stop. They don't stop singing. They keep getting behind us, and obviously the fans at home, and the nation's been incredible with us. So we'll keep fighting for them, keep trying to make them proud, and keep giving them something to cheer about.
So Gareth Bale's dangerous cross is what led to the own goal. In the end, the one Wales the match. And speaking to our reporter, Mark Pittman, in the last couple of days, here's the Wales manager, Chris Coleman, on Ramsey and Bale.
Rambo actually wants to come deeper a lot to start play, because he's capable of starting play and then finishing off at the other end, whereas Bale, he looked to find pockets and bits of space in the opponent's half where he can pick it up and do the most damage, you know. Rambo's probably more a box-to-box type, whereas Bale is definitely at the other end. When Bale plays wide, you know, he does a lot of backtracking, defending. We don't actually want him there. We want him up the other end of the pitch, so hence why we give him that more of a roving role in the team.
Tom, Chris Coleman certainly likes a nickname. It sounds like he's the kind of manager who would make a nickname out of any name he could.
Thanks, Robbo. It was good to hear from Colo there, wasn't it? I think he's been great, Coleman, actually. I think he had some detractors after a couple of dodgy spells in England, and he went to Spain, and maybe, was it Greece as well, I think he went to?
Or? Yeah, he was at Sociedad, I think, wasn't he? I think he had a go there, yeah.
And he had a few bad spells, but what he's done for Wales has been outstanding, hasn't it? And regardless of what happens in the quarterfinals, what a job he's done. And he's got, as he mentioned there, Rambo and Bale, two great players, and, you know, and having those two players to call on has been a great help.
And apparently Ashley Willow, I suppose, yep. Should be fit despite picking up a shoulder injury. Let's remind ourselves how Belgium got this far. They didn't get off to the best start, but they're the only side in the last eight who lost their opening game.
Can Driver, this to wrap it up? Surely they will. Yes, they have. Graziano Pala. No argument now.
It's a 2-on-1 here. He's got Lukaku completely free. Romelu Lukaku! Seals the 3 points for Belgium.
Hazard for Nainggolan! Belter! A Belgian beauty! Look out for them in the round of 16!
Can he get his name on the score sheet? To put the gloss on a great display? You bet he can! World class! And quarter-final bound, Belgium.
Eden Hazard's stunner against Hungary there, and Tom, it looks like Belgium are coming to the boil at exactly the right time, and in particular Eden Hazard.
Yeah, they get better and better, don't they, every game, I think. As you said, they started very poorly, but they've got better with every game. They look like they know how to get the best out of those players now. They've shown, I think the first goal against Hungary was a header as well, so it's not all speedy counter-attacks, and you know, they've shown that they've got more than one weapon, really.
Chris, do you expect a change in the front line, a change in striker for Belgium? Romelu Lukaku hasn't really got going aside from the Ireland game, and Michy Batshuayi came off the bench to score.
Yeah, it's a big decision. It's been one in Belgian football because they play one striker and they have four potentially very good ones in the squad with Origi and Benteke too. So sort of for the last 12 months, it's been one of the big decisions that he had to make. Who was going to start up front? Lukaku got it. Does he play Batshuayi because, you know, he'll be full of confidence? I think he'll still go with Lukaku. And I wonder whether the fact that he plays in British football, knows a lot of those Welsh defenders,
sure,
might be a difference. They are going to have to make a change. Thomas O'Malley suspended, so they're going to have to make a change at the back. It's going to be a really interesting game because I think with good performance comes expectation now. They're one of the four teams. They're in the good half of the draw, and I think Belgium will expect to beat Wales. I'm not saying they will, but whether that brings different pressures now.
Whoever plays up front for Belgium, it's a really difficult task against that Welsh back five because they have been absolutely superb. And obviously with those three central defenders, that one up front on his own, it relies on the support, really. Joachim Löw was talking about, after the victory against Slovakia, he was asked by the German media a number of times, is there any chance that Mario Götze will come back and play a false nine role? And he basically said it's irrelevant who plays the lone striker role, big or little. If he's isolated on his own without support, he's going to struggle regardless.
Right.
Belgium have got the perfect players to back up that central striker, and I think they're going to be absolutely key against Wales.
Yeah, exactly. And the Wales fans, Chris, have even taken to singing about their back five.
They have five at the back. I won't go on, but with Bale in attack. It's one of those great football chants where they're taking the mick out of their the fact they haven't got any strikers, so they have to play Bale up front and five at the back. But they do. Not every team can play it, but when you do see three centre-halves who all look comfortable in that system, it's mightily effective, and I think they have that with Chester, Davis and Williams, which is why Ashley Williams being fit, which Chris Coleman says he is an almighty boost for Wales.
Next up, we discuss Germany against Italy. The Azzurri through after a round of 16 win over the holders Spain. Earlier, I spoke to Giuseppe Pesantis, a commentator for Italian radio station Rai Radio.
For the latest news from inside the team camps, go to Euro2016.com.
Giuseppe, how excited are people in Italy about the current team that beat Spain?
Oh, when Italian team is playing in Italy, forget all the problems. With this shirt, blue shirt, azzurra in Italian, and going in the square, in the place, in the home, with the colleagues, with the family, with the friends. Italy is not favored from the match as the Belgium, as the Spain, Italian win. When Italy is favorite versus Ireland, Italy loss. And then with Germany, Italian not favorite.
Are you surprised by how good Italy have been?
I'm surprised because no very big player except Buffon, the goalkeeper, but the others are normal player. Italy lose Marchisio, Verratti, very good player. But this team with Antonio Conte is a team strong for the character. And the other team suffered. I am surprised, yes, but I think versus Spain, the victory was absolutely real, correct.
The defence and goalkeeper, all from Juventus. How important is that to being very organised?
Is the most important sector of the team because Buffon is a very good goalkeeper. Bonucci, Barzagli, Chiellini, all with Buffon in Juventus. They know themselves. And I think Spain have many problems. Germany, the team is strongest in respect to Italy. Mm. But very good team, but very difficult to mark the goal in Italy, and I think defender and goalkeeper are best sector of the team.
You sound confident that Germany will not beat Italy.
But also Italy don't beat Spain from many times. The last time was at USA
94.
Played Baggio Roberto and Baggio Dino to Baggio. Germany fair Italy for lots of reason.
You think they're scared of Italy a little bit?
Yes, I think so. I remember World Cup in Germany 10 years ago in Dortmund. I was here. All the German people for German. Italy beat German too. is a big problem. But this time I think German is favorite for Italy because the Nationalmannschaft, the German team, is is very strong, is the first in the world. Italy must play the perfect game if you want to win. No big team, no big star, and then maybe Italy go in,
win
in semi-final, yeah, in final, yeah. But I think it's difficult, but I hope.
Obviously, Antonio Conte is leaving for Chelsea. It has not affected the Italy team. Why has it not affected the mentality of the team?
Antonio Conte won the team all the days because he suffer if he don't go in the field.
Well, he kicked the ball during the game. He kicked it away,
yes,
didn't he?
Yes, yes.
Can we have a prediction for the Germany game?
I said Germany 2, Italy 0.
Oh. Oh no, what are you saying after all that?
Scaramanzia. I'm scaramantic.
Thank you very much, Giuseppe.
Okay, sorry for my English.
No, it was perfect. Thank you.
For the best coverage and the latest news, follow the @UEFA Euro account on Twitter.
Giuseppe Bassantis there from the Italian station Rai Radio. Scaramantico as well. You could probably tell at the end of the interview that I didn't know what that meant. He hadn't, having said so much about why Italy were going to beat Germany, that he'd give that scoreline to predict that result that Italy would win. But I found out from a colleague who speaks Italian that Scaramantico is superstitious and he didn't want to explicitly predict that Italy would win, say 1-0, because it would, of course, curse them. Are you a superstitious man, Tom?
I spend most of my life avoiding three drains and it takes up far too much of my time, in fact.
Well, Germany take on the Italians, and you saw Germany up close the other day in what was ultimately a very convincing win over Slovakia in the end.
Before the Italy-Spain game, that was certainly the most convincing performance I've seen at the tournament. I think perhaps the most convincing performance. They missed a few chances early on, but the way that they kept possession, the way it was just wave after wave of attacks, Slovakia played into their hands slightly. The Slovakian coach even said afterwards that they played with a little bit of fear, which obviously helped the Germans. But I think they were superb. And they're, again, just like Belgium, coming to the boil at just the right time.
Interestingly, England couldn't break down Slovakia when they were so deep in the group stage. How did Germany find a way through on three occasions?
Well, Germany went one better than Wales's five at the back and trained in the week against six defenders because they were expecting such
in the lead up to that game?
Yeah, right. They were expecting Slovakia to sit so deep and get so many men behind the ball. And, well, it paid off, didn't it?
Yeah, absolutely did. And Mario Gomez, he scored again, Tom.
Two goals.
I believe
that puts him in golden boot contention, in fact.
It certainly does. So Julian Draxler was one of the stars of the performance as well, Chris. He did actually start the tournament in the team. Mario Götze came in and didn't really perform. One of the interesting things from the game was that Draxler said that Jürgen Löw told him before the game to try more, get himself into one-on-one situations with defenders, and sure enough, that's how they score one of their goals.
Yeah, what a brilliant goal. I love watching Draxler when he's in full flight, when he just drifts past people. He was excellent. Gomez coming into the team, I think, has added a different dimension. It will be interesting to see if they stick with that, because no disrespect to Slovakia and Northern Ireland, where Gomez has played and started, but Italy, that back three with Gigi Buffon behind, they're the best defensive unit in world football,
yeah,
for
as
me.
Giuseppe said, yeah.
And for me, it's the two best teams at Euro 2016 so far. It's almost a shame they're meeting in the quarterfinals. I think whoever wins that game for me will be massive favourite to go on and lift the trophy on the 10th of July.
I think coming up against a back three is going to be quite easy after they've nailed those six.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, playing that back three is like playing a back six with the Italians. Let's finish up the show by talking about Poland-Portugal. Tom, Portugal got that win against Croatia, who were much fancied. And, you know, it was almost a surprise result given the nature of the way that Croatia had been playing. But they left it late against Croatia.
It wasn't the most entertaining fare, was it, that round of 16 game? But Portugal got the job done, as you say, and I think they're going to really fancy themselves I think they're going to get to the final, personally. There's my prediction. You've not even asked me yet.
Oh, that's your surprise prediction for the day.
I don't know if it counts as a surprise anymore.
So we'll have that. So why do you think Portugal will make the final? I mean, they finished third in their group.
The key to tournament football is the third team we've mentioned this with. They're just coming to the boil at the right time. The group stage is, especially here, when you know you can finish third and go through, the group stage is all about finding your best team, resting players when you can, if there's an opportunity, and just getting everything right for those key knockout stage games. I mean, Joachim Löw said it himself that in the group stage, teams play the game, in inverted commas, because they know that one win can get them through. And Joachim Löw, I think, was looking forward to these games against teams that would come at them a little more. And he said straight away after the Slovakia game that that is no pointer to them winning the tournament. They need to improve because they're coming up against totally different propositions.
Quaresma with the winner in the last game off the bench, but he's still not expected to start the next game.
Yeah, well, they have options, don't they, Rob? But I also wonder if they just feel at home in France. Three of their players were born in France. There's a massive Portuguese population. I think 1.2 million people of Portuguese descent live in the country. They haven't been spectacular yet, Portugal, but they are through to their sixth quarterfinal in a row, which is an amazing record.
I was speaking to Joe Walker, one of our reporters with the Portugal team in the week, and he said, I mean, you mentioned the Portuguese contingent in France, and he said when they got back, the team bus at 4 a.m. To their training base in this very remote village, there were loads of Portuguese fans to welcome them back after beating Croatia. So they take on Poland, Chris, and Jakub Błaszczykowski is getting a lot of credit at the moment. Why is he so important to the Poland team?
Well, goals and assists, probably the two most important things in football. He's been one of the stars, I think, here in France. No longer plays for Dortmund, but he plays his football in Italy, and he's been absolutely fantastic for them. And Lewandowski hasn't scored yet. Every single player talks about the work that Lewandowski does, and it's not that he's having a bad tournament, he just hasn't scored yet. Milik has been a good player for them as well. But as I said, it's that the back two, which haven't played together very much, Glick and Pazdan. But one goal conceded so far, and it was that overhead kick from Shaqiri, which is one of the greatest goals we'll probably ever see in this competition. They have strength at both ends of the pitch, Poland. And for them, I mean, they hadn't won a game at a final tournament before coming to France. And all of a sudden, they're a game away from the last four.
So Poland take on Portugal. Wales take on Belgium. The winners of those ties will play in one semi-final, and then the other semi-final will be made up of two teams from Germany, Italy, France, Iceland. And guys, this is where we get your semi-final lineup prediction.
I'm glad you reminded me, Rob, because again, I'm forgetting the fixtures. I've got them written down in front of me, and I'm going Portugal, Belgium, France, Italy.
Oh, Germany out, says Tom Kell exclusive. Chris.
I am going to go Poland against Belgium, and I'm going to go Germany against France. I think Germany will end that Italian hoodoo.
It always has to be different, Chris,
it does,
doesn't it?
It's always difficult. Thank you very much for downloading the podcast. Thanks to Chris and Tom as well. Don't forget, if you do have a moment, please leave us a review on iTunes. You can follow our Audio Boom channel, and we'll be back ahead of the semi-finals.
Thanks for listening to the official UEFA Euro 2016 podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on iTunes or follow us on SoundCloud.